honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We'll have one more Countdown to D-Day episode next time as we hear from men who jumped behind enemy lines 75 years ago. And as we come down the home stretch of today's episode, let's do what our nation sets aside a day for every year. As we mark Memorial Day weekend, let's honor the more than 1 million Americans who have given what President Lincoln famously called their last full measure of devotion for our country. Maybe there's somebody in your family who is counted in that number. For me, it's my great-great-uncle, a World War I pilot killed in France. But I want you to hear today from Ken Beaton, a retired educator who has, for years, chronicled the stories of veterans in and around Carson City, Nevada. But recently, Ken completed a more personal quest, as described in the book A Toddler's Picture in His Uncle's Helmet, capturing his journey of discovery as he sought to learn more about his uncle, Richard Daigle, who was killed while serving with the Devil's Brigade, the famed 1st Special Service Force, made up of American and Canadian commandos, who played such a crucial role in the liberation of Italy in World War II.
Ever since I was a little kid and could remember, and I'm probably talking about 4 years old, my mother and her two sisters and my grandmother all would, don't ask me how many times they said this, Ken, they'd say, your uncle carried your picture in his helmet when he was killed in action on Monte La Difensa in Italy, December 3rd, 1943. That was, you might as well say that was a tattooed on my arm as far as how many times that I heard this. And I thought it was a picture of me at 6 months. You know how they, whether you're male or female, they put you in a white gown and they prop you up and they squeeze toys and they get you to giggle and laugh and then hopefully click that nice picture. But no, this was a picture taken December 20th, 1942 in Mobile, Alabama, and I'm wearing my dad's chief's Coast Guard hat. My dad was in the Coast Guard. I'm in front of the trunk on my dad's 37 Chrysler, and it was that day, it was my uncle's 21st birthday, and he got killed in action 17 days short of his 22nd birthday, and that made an impression on me. I can remember my grandfather being quiet at a family gathering, and this would be, I was 13 or 14 at the time, and one of my aunts or my mom or my grandmother would say to my grandfather, Pop, what are you thinking about? Richard. And he was the person that came home on December 22nd. He was the first person home, and instead of the telegram delivery kid getting a signature, because no one was home, he just stuffed it under the door, and my grandfather found that telegram, and it destroyed him. So can you imagine what Christmas was like 3 days later? I wrote a piece for the Nevada Appeal. I titled it A Blue Christmas, after Elvis's song. It had to be the bluest Christmas that they ever faced. I was young, and I don't think I was at my grandparents' house when there were a couple of guys, and I just assumed that they were from the force, that came and explained how Richard got killed. He and I think his foxhole mate had taken out one German machine gun nest. It was probably the MG-42, which got the nickname Hitler's buzzsaw, because it fired 25 rounds per second, 1,500 rounds per minute. They said how he got this one machine gun nest in the battle, and a second machine gun nest got him, and I'm quite sure his foxhole mate, because the two of them were buried beside one another. The Graves Registration Report information, which was 31 pages that I requested, listed the person buried on my uncle's left and his right, and Harry Diet was one of the people.
And you didn't know any of these names. You'd heard the story about how he was killed secondhand from when you were a kid. But when you started investigating and learning more, what was your goal? Because I'm pretty sure you weren't thinking, hey, I'm going to write a book about everything I find, because you don't know yet what you're going to find. What was your ambition or your goal or your motivation?
I was so amazed. I mean, here he was. He was almost 22 years old. I was the first niece or nephew on my mom's side of the family. He had seen me before he enlisted in the Army in early 42. You know, I guess there's something special about the first one, you know, your firstborn. And apparently it was that way with him. I wanted to learn more about him. It seems so strange. How could you love someone to want to carry their picture? I hadn't done anything. I was just the, you know, babies are just kind of a blob. They eat, you know, you need to change their diapers. Everything's done for them. I wanted to find out more about him. And I sent letters, I made phone calls in 2002 to different guys in the force that I got information about. There was really no one that could tell me the exact stories. I did learn that he enjoyed playing poker. He must have smoked because there was a lighter and I believe there were cigarettes as far as personal effects. And I learned about his girlfriend. I discovered her from the name being on engraved on a knife. She was a student nurse, and my aunt, the youngest in the family, had told me just this one thing. She didn't tell me any name. She couldn't remember the name, but she said Richard had a girlfriend when he was training at Fort Ethan Allen in Burlington, Vermont. When I started really doing some investigating, I Googled Burlington, Vermont hospitals, and there was only one, the Fanny Allen Hospital. I found out that they had a school of nursing, and the woman in archives says, yeah, Rachel Marguerite's parents lived in Bennington. So I Googled the Bennington town clerk, and he answered the phone himself. And he says, oh, you missed Rachel by about 5 months. She turned 90, and it was either the next day or the 2 days after her birthday that she passed away. And I'm there, oh, no. And it was all my fault. And he said to me, I can give you the name of and the phone number of her adult daughter, Anna. When Anna came to the phone, I said, Anna, my name is Ken Beaton. I've been doing genealogy research about my uncle, Richard, and I've discovered that your mother was my uncle's girlfriend. And it was an oh moment on her part. And I told her a chapter of her mom's life that she didn't know about. Because what mom is going to sit down, hey, Anna, let me tell you about the guy I almost married, but he didn't come back from Italy. He got killed in action. No one's going to tell that story. And the only way her mom found out, because she wasn't a relative, she didn't get a telegram, was her Christmas card got returned to her. I have my mother's Christmas card that she sent to my uncle. She mailed it in the middle part of November of 1943, and it finally returned to her the beginning part of February. It had several return addresses on it. It had killed KIA marked on that, and so it had to be a horrible way for Rachel to find out that this guy that she was romantically involved with, and if he came home, he would have married her. And so when I show people the book and I show people Rachel's picture, I say, you know, this is my almost aunt. She almost was my aunt. If my uncle had come home, he would have married her, but that didn't happen. So I got Rachel's picture, and I got Harry Dayette's picture. He was a T4. And I'm quite sure my uncle's foxhole mate, and that they got killed together, because I have proof, graves registration proof, that they were buried together. I got that picture from Harry's adult grandson, who's 55. Harry was older than my uncle by about 9 years, and he was a lumberjack, and that's what the force was looking for, outdoors type people. I still belong to the First Special Service Force Association, and I went to my first association annual meeting, and it was in Helena, Montana, where the force trained at Fort William Henry Harrison. I never was so welcomed. I didn't know anyone there. It is a great bunch of people. And that was in 2006, and I talked to a gentleman, Gianni Blasi. He has become an expert of the force, partly because it was the force that liberated his parents. He wasn't born yet. He was born after the war. He told me, and I just met him maybe 15 to 30 minutes earlier, he says, you email me before you come, and he says, we'll climb La Defensa together. And he told me something. He says, anything for the force.
And what was it like to climb up to the place where your uncle was killed, knowing that as he was there, your photo was in his helmet?
We identified the wall that they came up. It was somewhere between 100 to 200 feet where they had to use ropes and come up. And each guy had about 70 pounds on his back because you had to carry in everything, your water, all your ammo. The guys that were mortar people, someone had to carry the tripod, someone had to carry the tube, and they all had rounds, mortar rounds, with them. And right about dawn, it was still dark, they hit the Germans. Our tracers were one color, and the German tracers were another color. And the way I heard it described, it kind of looked like 4th of July. Because there were tracers all over the place. They took that mountaintop in 2 hours' time. And the brass, the generals, thought it would take them a couple of months to take that. This is a Gold Star family story. It's not just the person that gets killed in action. The whole family carries that. He's been gone more than 75 years now. And my grandparents are gone, and in fact, all of his brothers and sisters are gone. His last sister died March 3rd. This is a Gold Star family story, and it's very important to remember the Gold Star families.
So your family's story is one of hundreds of thousands of stories like this. 406,000 Americans died in World War II. When I look at this cover of your book and I see that picture of you on your uncle's last birthday on Earth that he carried in his helmet and was with him when he was killed. Did you ever feel like maybe he carried that picture because that's what he was fighting for? And that you're part of a generation of Americans that he knew he was risking his life for?
Well, it's part of the reason why you and I and everyone else in this country learned English. Otherwise, we'd be speaking German, because Hitler had certain people designated who, when he conquered America, they were going to be the mayor for this community or that community or that. I couldn't believe that when I discovered that. And that's not that well known. Not that it's a top secret, but it just wasn't advertised. Maybe it's too scary. There were tough times, and this nation pulled together. And I hope that they get an appreciation of the sacrifice that, and this was just one person. And the Army had 7 million guys in the Army. Now, they all weren't carrying a rifle, because for every person you have in the front, you have about 10 support personnel, and every role is important. We owe so much to these people. That's partly why the reason why I write. I've interviewed a number of different vets, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War vets, and put their stories in a commentary in the Nevada Appeal, and giving those vets recognition.
Like you said, you've been interviewing veterans for so long and writing their stories, and it's clear that you've always had this appreciation for what they did and the value assigned to it. But going down this journey and learning more about your uncle and putting this book together, did you come to even deeper or more expansive understanding of what we mean when we talk about the price of freedom?
Yes, I did, because that first day in taking La Defensa, there were 39 of the boys killed in action, including my uncle's company commander, who was a captain, and their battalion commander, who I met his son, and their battalion commander died without knowing that his son was born, because the Canadians hadn't received their mail. All of their names are listed in what date and how many were killed in action and how many died of wounds. I know people have heard it before, but freedom is not free, and fly your flag on Memorial Day.
And when you fly your flag on Memorial Day, think about those courageous Americans it honors. People like Ken's uncle, Richard Daigle. That book, A Toddler's Picture in His Uncle's Helmet, is linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. As Ken said, it's the story of one Gold Star family. And perhaps you know a Gold Star family. Say an extra prayer for them this Memorial Day weekend. And don't let this be the only weekend of the year that you live in a way that assigns a greater value to that liberty that so many have given their lives for. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll remember on Memorial Day and every day that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.